Support for WPR comes from Rutabaga Paddle Sports, offering kayaks, canoes, and outdoor equipment for anyone wanting to experience the natural beauty of Wisconsin water. 2620 Rimrock Road in Madison or rutabagashop.com.
You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. Happy to have you along on this Memorial Day, Monday, May the 28th. And this is our State Capitol Report. Every week at this time, we look at the latest political news happening under the State Capitol Dome. Later this hour, after 7:30, we will welcome in a guest who is the chair of the Senate Committee on Veterans and Military Affairs. And we'll talk about what the state is doing or what Democrats in the state Senate want to do to help veterans in Wisconsin. That's coming up after 7:30. But first, we will welcome in Sean Johnson, Wisconsin Public Radio state government reporter, to talk about issues that will be making news this week and review some of the hot stories from the week before. We always welcome your participation at 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. We wonder what state issue has you talking or wondering. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. Sean Johnson, Wisconsin Public Radio state government reporter, joins us in the studio on this holiday. Good morning.
Morning.
Thanks for coming in.
Sure.
Should be a day off for you, but it's not. We appreciate
it. The rest of the day.
Yeah, so we just heard from a guest talking about the high gas prices in Wisconsin. A lot of people on the road on this Memorial Day, and gas prices taking a chunk out of our pocketbooks. The state government's going to be taking up the governor's proposed oil tax this week. What's going on with that?
Yeah, how's that for a time? Mm-hmm. The legislature's budget panel will be taking up the governor's proposed tax on oil that comes into Wisconsin. And this is going to be a situation where Democrats paint it as an assault against big oil. Republicans will call Doyle's plan an assault on taxpayers. But it's also a battle between two of the state's biggest interest groups. They've been running radio ads. Here's a snippet of one of them that's being run by the state's biggest business group, Wisconsin Manufacturers and Commerce, which is against the oil tax.
Give me that phone.
What are you doing?
I'm calling 800-362-9472. I'm telling my legislator to vote no on the automatic gas tax hikes in SB 40. You should, too.
Paid for by Wisconsin Manufacturers and Commerce.
And then that prompted this response ad from the state's road builders who want the tax.
The state's Chamber of Commerce is running ads and wants you to believe that doing nothing is good for Wisconsin. You know better. It's time for Wisconsin to turn the tables on big oil.
Well, who doesn't want to turn the tables on big oil?
Yeah, exactly, right. There's a lot of money at stake here, which is why you're seeing interest from these groups. They have a lot at stake. This tax is supposed to bring in more than $270 million in the next couple years. And with if fuel prices were to stay high as they are now, it would bring in more tax because it's taxing these oil companies on their or these refiners on their gross receipts. Definitely a contentious battle and one that could be a tough vote for some lawmakers.
Sean, I talked with somebody from WMC last week, not specifically only about this proposed oil tax, but in taxes in general or increased taxes and fees in the governor's budget, which WMC does not like very much. And WMC was saying that, in essence, this oil tax is going to end up raising Wisconsin's gas tax by 5 to 7 cents per gallon. It's not really the gas tax, but saying that's going to hike the price of a gallon of gas.
It all depends on whether it works the way the governor has designed it to work. And he's put something in the gas tax that's called an anti-pass-through provision. And it says oil companies can't pass on the cost of this tax to consumers, that they have to absorb it. So that raises a couple questions. One, how do you make that work? How do you monitor it? The governor's going to put, he has money for a few auditors to keep track of these things in his budget, but how do you monitor it? I mean, if an oil company wants to raise its tax on the natural gas that it also sells, or the asphalt that it sells to offset this this cost, how do you keep track of that? And I think the other big question is this legal? The Doyle administration points to a case that went to the Supreme Court involving Puerto Rico that basically decided that states can have their own excise taxes on oil. But this idea of the anti-pass-through provision has not really been litigated at the, you know, up to the Supreme Court level. So, and then if that goes into court, the question is, does the tax stay in place? Then you'd have this oil tax where it would be allowed to be passed on to consumers while it's tied up in court potentially. So there's a lot of what ifs with this tax.
Any idea how joint finance is going to go on this big oil tax?
If they go the way they have on most stuff, I think this plan will survive committee and live to see another day and basically, come to the table later on in budget negotiations. It would take a Democrat voting against it, basically, and I think they've been pretty strong siding with their governor here. The alternative for them, if they wanted to fund transportation at the level the governor's funding it, and they didn't want to have this oil tax, they'd have to do something like raise the state's gas tax by 5 cents per gallon, which would be a unpopular move,
To say the least. We have just a minute before a weather break. The governor's proposed vehicle registration fee increase also gets a vote in joint finance this week.
Yeah, it would go up $20, and again, that's something that would go to pay for transportation costs. And another one that an area where the state budget would actually have an impact on people, and where they'd notice something that lawmakers are voting on here.
Talking with Sean Johnson, Wisconsin Public Radio state government reporter, about what our state lawmakers are going to be up to this week. And we'll also take a look at what happened in the previous week. And we'll welcome your participation as we continue on with our state capitol report. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. You're listening to the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine, hoping you'll stay tuned. Ben Marins is with you this afternoon for At Issue with Ben Marins on this Memorial Day. After 5, Ben and his guest will discuss the boundary line still being drawn on what is and is not acceptable speech. One example, how we are allowed to talk about war on Memorial Day. Well, that's coming up after 5 o'clock. We're talking with Sean Johnson, Wisconsin Public Radio's state government reporter. It's our state capitol report every Monday at this time. We review the big stories from under the state capitol dome and preview what's coming up in the week to come. Talking some about what joint finance will be taking up this week, the joint finance committee writing the next state budget. And Sean, joint finance last week also was busy doing things related to W-2?
This is a situation where lawmakers were sort of in the heat of agreement, and they decided to fully fund a child care subsidy for needy families, and found a compromise that almost all lawmakers supported. But in order to get there, lawmakers had to cut several new welfare programs the governor wanted. Republican Finance Committee co-chair Kitty Rhodes says that they wanted to prioritize this child care subsidy before they spent any money on new welfare benefits.
I think it's a step forward in maintaining the commitments that we have to the providers, keeping our focus on keeping people at work, and admitting that we had to take some tough steps to fill the hole that was left here. So to the authors, I congratulate you. I know it's not a pretty job. Not everybody's happy with this, including all of us who sit at the table. But you did what you had to do, I think, in light of the resources that we had and the commitments that we made.
And so this is one where a lot of Democrats went along with it, and Republicans went along with it reluctantly. And in the process, lawmakers slashed extra welfare funding the governor set aside for pregnant women, for poor people who take care of newborn babies. They got rid of Doyle's proposed statewide rating system for child care centers. And Milwaukee Senate Democrat Lena Taylor fought back tears as she told her colleagues that they were underestimating the number of Wisconsin residents who will need government help in the coming year.
This is a sad moment when we don't think about the effect on needy families. Yes. We do have to live within our means. Yes, we do have to prioritize. But these are people who don't have it and come to us because they are in desperate need.
And another thing we learned last week, there's joint finances work on W-2, but we heard with the passage of the federal Iraq War funding bill, that now Wisconsin seniors have senior care again.
Yeah, what's that have to do with senior care?
I know, the pork, but it's good pork.
Yeah, well, yeah. So that's how Washington works, I guess. They had a bill they knew the president was going to sign because it basically did what he wanted to on the war. And so you had a number of projects in there. Wisconsin Senior Care was one of them. And this is the drug discount program that the state has run in recent years. It's largely seen as a better alternative for seniors to the federal Medicare Part D program. And Senator Cole put it in the budget. It's going to be extended for another 2 years. And so 2 years from now, we'll have this whole senior care soap opera back before us again. We'll be talking about will it be extended, won't it be extended, yeah. Things like that.
Speaking of health care, I did talk with one of the freshman Democrats in the Senate who introduced a bill that would eliminate the sick leave benefit that lawmakers currently have, the accumulation of unused sick leave to pay for health insurance after retirement. And we had a Republican lawmaker call in from the state assembly saying you should just pass what the assembly has already passed, which is eliminate this benefit for lawmakers plus other elected officials. So we had a little mini debate on that on this program last week. Is this going to be a big debate in the legislature?
Yeah, it sets up a situation where you could have all lawmakers or Senate Democrats and Assembly Republicans both saying that they pass something and nothing actually gets to the governor's desk. Because, as you mentioned, Assembly Republicans want to cover all elected officials. Senate Democrats are just now introducing this proposal to cover lawmakers. And this is that health care benefit that lawmakers can accumulate and use to pay for health care when they retire. The thing is, many lawmakers aren't claiming sick days, and they end up racking up rack up more than $100,000 worth of credits for this program. I think there would be support in the assembly for a plan that was limited to just lawmakers. The question is whether leadership would let something like that get to a vote in that chamber if it passes the Senate.
One controversial issue that we'll be getting a public hearing, I see, on the lists of things that you're going to be covering this week, Sean, is that this proposed statewide smoking ban that would ban smoking in restaurants and bars and all workplaces around the state gets a public hearing on, what, Thursday?
This Thursday they're going to have a public hearing on that. And this is something the Senate Democrats are going to try to pass, I guess what you'd call the pure smoking ban that exempts nobody, that it covers all restaurants, all taverns, all workplaces. Smoking would be banned everywhere. I think there's going to be a push, though, to exempt taverns or at least phase them in because, the Tavern League is a powerful lobby in Wisconsin. Most lawmakers, have a number of taverns in the district, and the Tavern League can exert some pressure, and their members can exert some pressure. And the governor has talked about taverns need to be included in this smoking ban, but he might be open to something that phases them in over time.
Mm-hmm. We'll be doing a program on that on Thursday at this time, so you can call in and talk about that. You can call in and talk about any state issue, by the way, that is on your mind these days, what your state lawmaker is up to, 1-800-642-1234, in Madison, 263-1890. Coming up after 7:30, we will focus in on veterans issues and various bills that Senate Democrats hope to pass to help veterans in Wisconsin. We'll certainly welcome your participation on veterans issues coming up after 7:30. Right now, talking with Sean Johnson about what the state legislature did last week and what it's going to do this week. Another bill that gets a public hearing, Sean, this week is one that would mandate insurance coverage for autism treatment.
Yeah, this is something the governor originally proposed in his budget, but got taken out basically to get both sides to the table and start negotiating. Right now, this only has Democratic supporters that I could see. So I would think the idea that's keeping Republicans from signing on is this idea of mandating insurance coverage for anything. It just, generally don't think that's the best of ideas. But families with families of kids with autism have proven themselves to be an effective lobbying group in the past, and I'm sure they'll turn up the pressure on this bill, because caring for autistic kids without insurance is definitely an expensive endeavor.
Yeah. You know what I saw in the news late last week, and I'm going to spring this one on you, Sean, because I'm not sure that you were planning on talking about this. The Fred Risser announced that he will hold a hearing on the so-called Frankenstein veto sometime later in June. It might have been June 18th. And this was, he says, not because the State Journal had been haranguing him every single day with an editorial of a Frankenstein caricature with a countdown on its head marking the days that Fred Risser was not taking action on this particular bill. So the Frankenstein veto is going to be looked at later this month.
Yeah, and for those who don't know, the Frankenstein veto, as it's come to be known, is basically the governor has broad veto powers when it comes to the budget, and he can cross out, you know, almost every word over a series of several paragraphs and create a new sentence that gives him, you know, extensive power. You know, for example, in the last budget, he used it to transfer $400 million out of transportation and spend it on public schools. So this plan would scale back that power, but it's not going to happen in time for this budget. So the governor will still have that power this budget because Democrats basically didn't want to take it away from him in the short term. And so I think Senator Risser is going to have to balance the concern of other Democratic members who think that, you know, this shouldn't be done while we're in midstream here. Our guy needs to have power.
We have a caller on, I think, the lawmaker health benefit issue. Hi, Walt in Manitowoc. You're on the air.
Yes, of all of the taxes that we are concerned about, that one makes no sense at all. If the employees were salaried employees, I mean, if they were hourly employees, then it could make some sense. But if you're a salaried employee and you have a sick day, you take that sick day off without losing any pay, so what should they be able to accumulate that for later use? Your guest there said that up to $100,000.
Yeah, right. We only have a minute, Sean. You wanted to say what the argument is for why that benefit should exist?
I think Walt articulated the argument against this benefit pretty well. The argument for it is that if you don't have these types of benefits, lawmakers, you know, they're paid a decent wage, certainly, but you want to attract the best and the brightest, and if you want to have a citizen legislature, you need to have these types of things to attract lawmakers, they say.
In 30 seconds, can we talk about whether or not Joe Wynicke, the chair of the Democratic Party, is going to step down or not when some Democrats think he should because he's lobbying for AT&T?
Yeah, there's a couple county Democratic parties who think that he should step down. He says he's not going to, that he's not, you know, he needs to make money somewhere. Joe Wynicke's been a very successful party chair. The difficulty is he has to be kind of the mouthpiece of the party, and how can he talk about special interests when he's working for one?
Well, we will see if he will come on the program too this week.
Sure.
Thanks, Sean, for being with us.
Thanks, Joy.
This is the Ideas Network. You're listening to the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. It's 7:36 on this Monday, May the 28th, Memorial Day. This is our state capitol report when we review the news that's being made at the state capitol every week at this time. And on this Memorial Day, we decided to give a special focus to issues dealing with veterans. And we welcome your thoughts and questions for our guest, who is the chair of the Senate Committee on Veterans and Military Affairs. 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890, 263-1890. or send an email to talk@wpr.org, talk@wpr.org. We're going to talk about the package of bills that Senate Democrats unveiled about a month or so ago, issues that they are hoping the state can do for veterans, and we wonder what you think the state should do for veterans, or issues that you think are important to veterans that our state legislature ought to be taking up. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. Our guest is Jim Sullivan, Democratic State Senator from Wauwatosa, Chair of the Senate Committee on Veterans and Military Affairs. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy.
Thanks a lot for being with us. Now, you unveiled, actually, it looks like it was in March that Senate Democrats unveiled a Veterans Care Package. What's in the Veterans Care Package?
Yes, thank you, Joy. We did have an opportunity to talk with members of the media and unveil the Senate Democrats' Veterans Agenda back in March. We met over at the Wisconsin Department of Veterans Affairs Military Museum on the Capitol Square and announced these programs. Although I would like to say, just in terms of the overall package, that while this was something that the Senate Democrats were putting forth, that really an awful lot of these bills had enjoyed some bipartisan support. We had worked on these in a bipartisan fashion, but this was simply our effort as a caucus to come out and say, with the change of leadership, we want to refocus on the needs of some of these veterans, families, and the new veterans returning from the Iraq War. So that was a group of proposals that we were able to roll out, a number of which we've already had some success on, including a volunteer statewide veterans registry. Also, we have bills on family military leave and some military tax relief for our veterans, and also credit to bill military service for our veterans who have returned from service and gone into the state service.
Yeah, so talk about what this statewide registry. There has been some success with that. What is this statewide registry?
Well, the statewide veterans registry is a voluntary program for veterans to be able to enroll their contact information with the Wisconsin Department of Veterans Affairs. And this is also an efficiency in government kind of proposal, because what we found in the past is because people return from military service and go on to the rest of their lives, that sometimes it can be very difficult to get the information that we need to get out to service members and to be able to connect the individual who has earned a benefit with that benefit. And we've seen this in the past with the development of Gulf War syndrome. As returning veterans from the first Gulf War were starting to exhibit a panoply of syndromes, everything from nightmares, difficulty in concentration, breathing problems. What we're seeing is a pattern of different points of interaction with the medical system. What we needed was something where we can begin to organize that information, begin to start to see patterns in that kind of chaos, and be able to get early treatment to people, not only because certainly those veterans, the service members deserve that benefit, but also because of the fact that the care is going to be better for them. If we get to them sooner, we're able to make a greater impact and do that more efficiently with government resources. So the idea is that we don't know what kind of situations may end up affecting our veterans down the road, but through this voluntary veterans registry, we're able to get information to them, and we're able to perhaps see some of these ongoing challenges as they develop in the future.
I see here a bill that would provide assistance for veterans affected by depleted uranium. Is that something this registry would deal with?
That's actually very much something that we had in mind with the Veterans Registry. And the Veterans Registry, I should add, is, in fact, we've been successful in getting that in as a part of the governor's budget proposal right now. It's a relatively low-cost item, but it does allow you to catch some of these ongoing challenges ahead of time. And depleted uranium was definitely on our minds there. That would be Representative Nelson's bill from the Assembly. And as people may or may not be aware, a number of the shells that are being used in theater are made with this extraordinarily dense, depleted uranium rounds. It's valuable as an armor-piercing shell. And what happens is, of course, all of this is being dispersed with the gunfire. We don't know what kind of an impact it's going to take. That's going to have on people long run. It certainly doesn't sound like something safe, and particularly when we're looking at something where the symptoms may arise over time. What we want to do with the Veterans Registry is whether it's depleted uranium now, or whether it was Gulf War syndrome in the early 1990s, or whether it was some of the adverse impacts and the carcinogenic properties of Agent Orange during Vietnam, that we want to be able to know where you were, where you served, what you might have been exposed to, and then we want to be able to observe some of the patterns of symptoms and care that some of these veterans may be exhibiting over time.
Let me take some calls and welcome others. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890, as we talk about issues related to those in military service or veterans in Wisconsin. And James in La Crosse is our first caller. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, good morning.
Morning.
I just had a couple of comments, and I'll take your responses off the air. I'm a Navy veteran of 5 years of active service. I was a hospital corpsman. I served in two major emergency departments during my 5 years in. I did everything from suturing, starting IVs, assessments, triage, the whole bit. I am very pleased with the education benefits that Wisconsin veterans receive, and I think it's more than I could have asked for. I'm currently a senior nursing student, and I'm fortunate enough to be making very good grades. I am upset when it comes to employment, though. When it comes to getting employed in a hospital, my 5-year work experience in a naval emergency room may as well not exist because there's no civilian equivalent to my job. I wasn't an LPN, an RN, a CNA, a PA, or a physician. I was a corpsman. Up until this summer, I've been working as a janitor. I was able to do emergency work when I was on active duty, but now that I'm out, I'm still trying to work my way towards that again.
Hmm.
I think there needs to be a little bit more reciprocity between military and civilian jobs.
Hmm. Yeah, reaction to that?
Well, I thank James for his comments and also for his service. I think that the error being made there is on the part of an employer who fails to recognize what those experiences are. I've seen this in my own life and my experience with other members of the Navy Reserve and their transition back and forth from civilian to military jobs. I've seen firsthand the tremendous amount of training that individuals like James has had, and I'm the father of a retired military officer, and I remember him making the transition from 26 years of military service into the private sector. And there's a lot of people out there, that's a commitment from the private sector that we need to pay more attention to, because I think especially on a weekend like this, Memorial Day weekend or Veterans Day in November, that there's an awful lot of symbolism that goes along with this, and everybody says we support our troops, but what really matters is when these people come home and make exactly the transition that we want a guy like James to do, to be able to go out and utilize some of these great education benefits. But we need the private sector to redouble its commitment in terms of bringing these people, and it's to their own benefit, because these are people with some of the absolute best training that is to be found out there and in an awful lot of professions.
We're talking about issues affecting veterans in Wisconsin and what the state legislature hopes to accomplish this session to help Wisconsin veterans. And we welcome your questions and comments for our guest. Do you think the state's doing all it can to honor and benefit state veterans? Jim Sullivan, our guest, Democratic State Senator from Wauwatosa, Chair of the Senate Committee on Veterans and Military Affairs, 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.
You're listening to the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine. Happy to have you along on this Memorial Day, Monday, May the 28th. It's 12 minutes before 8 o'clock. Coming up after 8 o'clock, we're going to visit some of the best parks in the Midwest with our guest, formerly with Midwest Living and author of the new book, Parklands of the Midwest. That's coming up after 8 o'clock. This is our State Capitol Report, and for the rest of this hour, we are talking with Jim Sullivan, Democratic State Senator from Wauwatosa, Chair of the Senate Committee on Veterans and Military Affairs, talking with Senator Sullivan on this Memorial Day about efforts in the state legislature to help veterans in Wisconsin. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. It was a package of bills that Senate Democrats announced earlier this session that Senate Democrats wanted to pass through the legislature. We've talked about some of them, but we haven't talked about, Senator Sullivan, the family military leave proposal. What's going on with that?
Family military leave, Joy, is a bill that was proposed by Senator Kathleen Vinehut, who is one of my fellow Senate freshmen from Chippewa Falls. I am a co-sponsor of this bill. This bill adapts some of the ideas that we've had in the past on the federal level with moving people from civilian employment into the military and then back, and applies that to family members. This is a very timely bill and something that's very important to an awful lot of reservists. I've seen the need for this myself. When you have a individual who is uprooting themselves from their civilian life and going overseas into harm's way on behalf of all the rest of us, there's a shared burden with that. There's certainly a direct burden on the family members. If all of a sudden you have a husband or wife, mom or dad, who are about to be sent overseas and may not be back for 2 years, this is a tremendous hardship. There's an awful lot that needs to be done in order to prepare that family and that individual for deployment. The Family Military Leave Act would provide so that an immediate family member, a spouse or parent, is being deployed, then other individuals in that family, the spouse typically, gets some kind of unpaid leave from their employer. When orders are in excess of 30 days, then there's going to be a period of time when the spouse can take an unpaid leave in order to prepare their family for the deployment of their service members. And again, this is the sort of thing where really I think this is the least that we can do for our service members, because as these families are facing this kind of burden, the people that they are benefiting is all of those of us at home. We hear very frequently about how in this particular war, we're at war for military families, and an awful lot of the rest of us who don't have family members involved, it's like we're not seeing it. We're not seeing the sacrifice. This is the least that we can do in order to make that burden of deployment a little bit easier on those families. Mm-hmm. And then the following the military family member leave, then the employee spouse or parent then is able to return to their same position or a similar position.
What sort of tax relief are you proposing for veterans?
We actually passed a couple of bills out of committee just this past week, and these are bills that would expand the veterans' property tax credit. Both of these passed on a unanimous basis, have been brought up in the past, both by Democrats and by Republicans. In this case, the bill was drafted by Senator Libum. But these two bills, Senate Bill 101, Senate Bill 143, would provide a tax credit for those who meet certain criteria, either in terms of disability or trying to reform the entrance requirements that we have for a property tax credit in the state of Wisconsin. Right now, under current law, in order to qualify for property tax credit, the veteran has to be 65 years old, has to have been a resident of the state at the time of entry into service, and has to have a service-connected disability of at least 100%. What we're doing here is reforming the law to make it more in keeping with the reality of military families, which is people move around an awful lot. And if you're going to qualify for property tax credit in the state of Wisconsin, you're a 100% disabled veteran, then I don't think that it should matter if you entered service in 1943 in Manitowoc or if you entered service in 1991 in Omaha. The point is that you're a Wisconsin resident. We have a requirement that would say that this needs to be a 10-year consistent residency within the state of Wisconsin, which conforms the various different age requirements into a uniform standard, and I think it makes accessing these benefits less confusing for the veterans as well. Also, Senate Bill 143, which is a similar tax credit proposal, also reduces the amount of service-connected disability from 100% down to 60% and the standard of unemployability. Because we've got people out there who are really struggling to make ends meet, struggling to pay their property tax burden. We want to provide some relief to those individuals. And when we're talking about somebody who has given their health and wellness in order to be able to serve this country and is unemployable but doesn't reach a federal standard of 100% service-connected disability, then we're going to make things a little bit easier for those people to stay in their homes here in the state of Wisconsin.
Next, we go to Maddie in Waupaca. Hi, Maddie. You're on the air.
Hi. I saw a program on TV last week, and I don't know if it were what state it was based in, but this veteran was appeared to be permanently disabled. But anyway, they said that their health insurance was not covered for the family, and that they had a little daughter that needed surgery, but they couldn't afford it. And I wondered. So my question is, what is the case with situations like that? And if that is correct, if that information is correct, I think it's terrible. So anyway, I'll take my answer off the air.
Do you know Senator Sullivan?
Well, Maddie, thank you for your question. You bring up an important point in terms of health care. That is, of course, a bigger challenge, and that is something where we're going to be seeing this summer a new proposal from Senate Democrats for significant reform of the overall health care system. But here specifically as it relates to veterans and their families, I'm very pleased to say that we did pass a bill that was drafted by Representative Tony Siskunas from West Allis that provides gap coverage for our returning veterans. Certainly, we do have a strong veterans health program in the state of Wisconsin, and I should emphasize, as long as I have the opportunity, we have had some of the most comprehensive benefits for veterans in the state of Wisconsin that you can find anywhere in the country. We, in fact, after the stories recently about Walter Reed, I took the committee down to Union Grove to see the facility down there, where we're really finding that we're doing a much better job on veterans benefits in the state of Wisconsin, because we kept that top of mind when I think that, unfortunately, the federal administration in Washington has forgotten a little bit about that. But Representative Tony Siskunas' bill was there to provide gap coverage for those people who might not qualify for the VA system and might not have private insurance. So what we're talking about was a relatively small financial impact for bridging that gap when somebody is returning from service who has some kind of a service-connected disability or condition, who can't qualify because based on income or age or whatever, in order to get into the veteran system, that we make sure that there's a bridge there to provide coverage to those individuals.
Thank you, Maddie. June and Sean, hi, you're on the air.
Hi. My question is basically about the families. Many of the veterans are in hostels that are, say, in Washington or far away from Wisconsin. And I was wondering if there's any provision to help families be near their military person, similar to, say, the Ronald McDonald Project.
That's interesting. Is there anything for families in Wisconsin to be near their loved one somewhere else?
I'm not aware of any similar program that would address the the needs of the families that June brings up. Certainly, whenever possible, I know that the Department of Veterans Affairs is going to want to have the individual cared for at home, and part of that is also a curative and rehabilitational perspective as well. They're going to do better at home with proximity to loved ones than they would if they're, for example, at Walter Reed in Washington. However, we've also got to be able to make sure that people are being connected to the medical needs that they've got. And so if those needs can be met at a central location like Walter Reed, then I think the military is going to put them there but get them home as soon as they can.
Boy, we ran out of time quickly. Less than a minute. Is there anything else on your agenda that we should talk about before we let you go?
Well, I wanted to just thank you for taking the time to give some attention to these issues, and I want everybody to remember that with Memorial Day, that it's not just about the great Wisconsin weather and some barbecue, but this is really an opportunity for us to remember the veterans who have served, whatever generation, whether we're talking about World War II or the kid down the street that's returning right now, and all those who have made a tremendous sacrifice, and I hope that in the state that we can do the best we can to serve those people, Joy.
Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you, Joy.
Jim Sullivan, Democratic State Senator from Wauwatosa. Thanks to Leo Durand and Christina Taylor for producing this hour. This is the Ideas Network.